Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and in the studio with me this morning is my guest, Todd Pettit. Good morning, Todd, and welcome.
Good morning, Amy.
Glad to have you here on this rainy December morning. Once again, this weather is just completely bananas to me.
Oh, it's nuts.
Yeah, I hear things are very lovely up there on Lazy Mountain with all the ice and rain.
Yeah, we skidded on down to the bus.
All right. Well, I'm going to treat you the same way I treat all my guests. I'd love to hear a little bit about your background, your connection to Alaska, how you got here, and your connection to Alaska agriculture. Let's start with that.
Okay. Well, I'm a lifetime Alaskan, born and raised. My grandparents have a farm up on Clark Wolverine Road, up on Lazy Mountain. And I didn't grow up there, but spent about every summer I could following my grandpa around, holding on to him.
Yeah.
And then moved up there when I was right around about 19 to 20 to farm and live and make it my life. And it always stuck with me.
It's what you always wanted to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did spend a little time outside, right?
I did.
Yeah.
Right outside of high school. Ironically, it was in the hay. And a lot of commercial hay in Ellensburg, a lot of exporting of hay. And we loaded vans that went to the coast and went over to Japan.
Okay.
For the racehorse industry.
Nice.
And so, yeah, that was it was an eye-opener for sure. I mean, the farming down there was a lot different than up here.
Absolutely, yeah.
But
so
but
when yeah. when did you move onto the farm full-time and then, yeah, we'll start there.
I was real close to 20.
Okay.
Actually, really right about this time of year.
Okay.
I got all my roommates in Anchorage lost their jobs, and I was the only one that could pay rent, and that didn't last very long, so it was time to make a life decision. So,
okay.
Moved up there and started farming with my granddad and grandmother, and then long to come about... 5 years later, I got married, and we started slowly going in another direction in terms of decided we wanted to raise some different animals.
So tell us when you got to the farm, what was being raised on the Pitchfork Ranch at that time?
We had beef cattle and hay. Sold hay to the horse people and fed the less desirables to the cows.
Okay.
And yeah.
And the cattle probably came down to the meat plant in town and were sold to folks or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Every fall we would round up all the crazies because they lived up on Lazy.
Oh, right.
And sometimes even behind Lazy on a cattle lease that we had up there. And so they'd come down wilder than a moose. It was always a rodeo.
Yes. I've heard stories about Jack's cattle at the meat plant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jack's cattle throughout Palmer, maybe when the fences didn't hold.
Yep.
So Todd, I'm obviously very familiar, with the ranch, but paint a picture for people that have never been there. What are we talking about in terms of acreage and location and things like that?
Well, I'm a little bit biased, but I think it's probably the most beautiful place in Alaska. We're, roughly about 640 acres.
Okay.
And it's comprised of a lot of hilly ground, but it's absolutely beautiful. It's backed up against Lazy. Wolverine Canyon is part of the property, so Wolverine Creek runs through it. And we farm probably about close to 300 farmable acres up there. And the rest is timber or pasture.
Mm-hmm. It is a pretty spot. I remember the first time I visited, and it was, I think it was July-ish, And there was some hay being made. And of course, I grew up on flatland down on the southern Oregon coast, where we make hay very differently. And I remember watching you guys pull, you know, a baler across some of those fields, these rolling fields. And I thought, holy crap, that doesn't look like fun trying to stand up on one of those trailers.
I always ask my grandfather, I says, you know, you had to, as early as you came to the valley, you always kind of had a choice of where you wanted to be, you know.
Right.
And
why didn't you pick the Springer?
Right. You know. And he says, well, we may not have one flat field or one square field, or either farming on a side hill or a downhill, but you always got something to look at when you're going around in circles.
Oh, that's a strong point.
And and boy, was he true.
So, but before we jump back to when you took over, when did Grandpa start farming? What year did he move to the property?
He moved to the property, I believe it was late 40s, early 50s.
Right.
49, 50, something like that.
Okay.
Our grandmother was already on the mountain. She moved up there in 47 with, right. And then was widowed. And
right.
Then Jack saved him from the turnip patch, as he said.
Right.
And they sold that farm and then moved up to his, which was about a mile and a half past the original farm. And
so they weren't colonists, but
no.
they were here a long time ago. Yeah.
Jack came up probably in 47, just out of high school as an 18-year-old. And worked for the railroad.
Right.
And then got drafted for Korea. And when he came back from Korea is when he bought the place.
Right. Yeah. Very good. Okay, so let's jump back to you've been on the farm for 4 or 5 years and you want to try something else with some different animals. So talk about that. What inspired you to move away from beef cows?
Well, excuse me. We were prices were really dropping. And we were making a lot better hay. So the hay was outvaluing the beef.
Okay.
And we were just getting done with them. You know, I really was in motion before I got up there, slowly. And I wasn't done raising anything, you know. My grandma was relieved to get rid of the cows, and then she was.
Their plan was just to go straight to hay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she lost her mind when I made the announcement that I wanted to raise buffalo.
Yeah.
Or bison.
Yeah.
And and Jack was thrilled. So that sent us on a mission. That was probably in 98.
Okay.
Made a trek out to Canada to, pick up some calves. And, so we started with, I bought 4 heifers and a bull calf.
Okay.
Outside of, Edmonton area.
Okay.
And then up the road they went.
Not without adventure.
Not without adventure though.
I just want to interrupt you real quick, Todd, to remind listeners that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and this morning in the studio with me is Todd Pettit, the owner-operator of the Pitchfork Ranch up on Lazy Mountain, and we just started talking about his bison. So four heifers and a bull calf, what'd you say? Sorry.
That's correct.
Yeah. And you brought them in. And so what, for those that don't know, you can't just transition from a beef operation to a bison operation without making some upgrades and changes to things like fences, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had to invest.
Yeah.
Heavily.
That was, yeah, that was, yeah, no more barbed wire.
Right.
We went to game fencing and, steel post drill stem. And we started, I had actually, fenced about 3 acres right next to my house, in this big pothole is what we called it.
Yeah.
It's like a big crater. And, kept them there for about a year, year and a half. And then, And then I should say I just got 4 to 5. Number one, that was all I could afford. I kind of bought at the top of the proverbial pyramid, if you would, when it comes to breeding stock.
Yeah.
And so they were quite expensive. And then the next year, the bottom fell out of it.
Oh.
And and I wanted to get a feel for them too.
Yeah.
So I didn't go out and just go crazy and buy a bunch and then figure out I made a mistake. But the only mistake I made was not getting into it 5 years earlier, I think.
Okay.
I really enjoyed them.
Yeah.
And
how old were they? How old were they when they
hit? By the time I got my permitting and everything going, they would have been roughly about 10 months old.
Okay.
So it would have been in end of February, first part of March.
Were they wild?
No, they were actually, they came from a really great place.
Okay.
That specialized in breeding stock. So they took great care in them.
Okay.
And, they were actually quite docile.
Okay.
It was a little bit thrilling going from that to wild cows.
So were you, I mean, like, they weren't like halter broke calm, but could you touch them and approach them in the field and things like that?
No touching.
Okay.
but they didn't run when they saw you.
Okay. All right.
And, but they had a little bit of training on the way up the road.
Do you want to tell that story? I don't know if we have enough time.
I know, right?
I'll put a plug in. If you run into Todd sometime, ask him to tell you the story about bringing the bison from Canada, because it's a really good story, but I'm afraid our show is too short for it. So let's talk about the nutrition needs of the bison as compared to the beef cows. Another thing that people, it's not obvious to people that there is a difference, and that what makes bison better in that regard?
They're much more efficient. They are the ultimate survivalist, if you will. Everything is about self-propagation and even before that, self-preservation.
Yeah.
And they can get by on lower protein levels.
Lower quality feed.
Lower quality feed. But that goes back to the ultimate self-preservation. If you want to increase your herd, if you want calves every year, you know, you need to put in the work and give them the right stuff.
Sure.
What's really unique about bison versus cattle is their inept ability to get through the winter on very little. And it's all about what they go into the winter with.
Sure.
And they will, something will snap inside of them that says, I need to put on as much fat as I can before winter hits. And by about the end of October or August, I don't know what it is, but they just convert. And they convert into stacking on back fat. And so what I try to do is just give them everything that they can possibly need, whether it's, you know, fresh pasture or even if they'll eat hay at that time of year, I'll even put that out, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And then lots of mineral also. But then they'll go into that winter and they'll carry that weight through the winter. Their metabolism will slow down by about a third once winter hits. And they just more or less turn into dinosaurs, really. I mean, they don't waste energy. And it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Because they can get in and keep going and hold that.
It's funny to watch them, having lived amongst them in the spring and summer, they move so much. Like they're not just out in front of the house hanging out. They're eating, and they're gone because they're moving on somewhere else. But in the winter, if they're out in front of the house, they're there for days just hanging out and chilling out. And you're right, they are like dinosaurs in the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So, Todd, why do you raise the bison? I mean, obviously, it's for, is it for the fiber production?
No, but I mean, you bring up a good point. They're the ultimate grocery store, if you will, because they do produce a great fiber. Before our daughter was born, my wife and mother-in-law, which my mother-in-law was a fantastic spinner, and they started playing with it when they would shed out.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit more work than the Kiviet, a little shorter fiber, but a lot of the same qualities, and that under down that they put on over the wintertime. You can't freeze a buffalo, and they're really unique in that. You know, the wind's up on Lazy, and they usually sit up on the knob.
Yeah, they
do. Facing it.
Yep. You can't freeze a buffalo. That might need to be a new t-shirt.
Right.
But the point being that it's untapped market then, that you could be doing more with the fiber, but the real reason that you raise the animals is for the meat, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When I fought the first five, it was all about breeding stock in Canada. And so they really hadn't had a meat base. You could get bull calves for just about nothing because it all went, all the financial equity, if you will, in these farms was based off of getting these heifers up to, 10 to 12 months old and then going to auction with them.
Okay.
And it was just a feeding frenzy for about 5 years there of people just buying and, up to the point of, and this is happening in the U.S. too.
Yeah.
They had $1 million bull sell,
what?
Which was insane.
At
the Golden or the big show in Colorado. I can't think of the name of it, but, it was
kind of a craze.
So when I went down there, they were like, you got a big market, for heifers and, selling breeding stock. Cause that's where we're making all of our money. And I said, no, it's just about the meat. And, they were taken back by that. But, I just knew it was going to fly. I'd been researching a lot of different types of animals to raise, and the bison were just gaining ground, not only was it healthy for you, but it's delicious.
Sure.
And it's hard to get both of those things together,
Yeah.
When you're trying to feed yourself nutritionally.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly has a strong reputation for that, for being a high value, high protein and low fat and all those things that those that do enjoy red meat are looking for. So fast forward to present time, you've now been raising these bison as meat animals for 20 years.
Yeah, no, that's crazy.
Does that make you feel old?
Yeah. I was actually last night thinking about when did I move up here and it's going on 26, 27 years.
Yeah. And so it's winter. It's harvest time right now, right? You are currently harvesting animals for your clients. And let's talk about that a little bit. So how do people access your product?
They track me down.
They get on, quote, Todd's list, unquote.
Yeah. So what I do is I, when I was building the herd, and I should say I went back out in 99 and got 10 more heifers.
Okay.
And so that was basically my seed herd, about 14 animals. And, I built that up, saved every heifer, that was born and, to build the herd and then any bull calves I raised up for slaughter.
Okay.
And, killing it 2.5 on grass, some 18 month olds, just because there was such a high demand in the beginning, I couldn't keep up with it.
Sure.
But I built the herd up to roughly 90 animals.
Yeah.
I was having incredible success rates in calving and so it I had to start looking at the herd at that point because I was getting over to my capacity and what I could carry on the farm and. So I did a call on the herd and, dropped her down to about 70 or so. And then I was only keeping roughly let's back up a little bit. So in a 70 animal herd, you've probably got about 20 to 25 mama cows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always usually pretty close to a rough 50-50 split on sex. And so I would, any bull calf that was born was raised to slaughter. And then I started slaughtering heifers, and I would save back, anywhere between 2 to 5 and, to introduce back into the breeding herd.
Right.
And, yeah. And I got up to about a point where I was roughly killing at 2.5 what was being born in the spring, somewhere in that area. So my herd would jump up in the spring to 80, 85 animals and then drop back down when I would butcher
right.
in fall or winter. And so about 5 years ago, I had to take another look at the herd, and hay was not doing so well, very poor yields. But what I was getting up was good hay, you know, high quality horse feed type hay. And so the price was up on hay, and I had to make a decision more or less of what I was going to make my money at, if right. you will. And you can't feed a butcher animal horse quality hay and expect to make money. You
know? Right.
You need a little bit lower quality down there. So I did another big call. And that was the hard one, because I really, really knocked them back, to almost half that number. I struggled at it. It was, you know, geez, it took me so long to build this up. Now I got to knock them back. What am I going to get? You know? And, but it was a financial decision, but it turned into a very good decision in terms of herd quality.
Yeah.
So what I've kept now is the very best of the best. If I see something out there that I just don't see producing, and my cull list, I should say, my cull list went from, you know, 10 things when I looked at a heifer to almost 20.
Right.
Things.
Yeah.
My checklist, if you will,
yeah.
on whether or not Standards. I was going to keep the animal.
Yeah.
And, so for the last, year now, we've been a little bit static, but, I'm building back up again.
Yeah.
And,
good. So one more interruption to remind folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm the host, Amy Pettit, and this morning in the studio with me is Todd Pettit, the owner and operator of the Pitchfork Ranch, a bison bison property here in Palmer up on Lazy Mountain. So you've got the herd size that you want and the numbers that you want, and it's my understanding you have the clientele that you want and need, more clients than you have animals, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This year's been a little struggle, though, ironically. I think everybody's feeling the economic crunch.
Oh, sure.
And I've actually had to work at moving animals,
oh.
which is something
I've never heard you say that.
I know. It's...
So am I hearing you correctly? Do you have meat available?
I could.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I could.
Wow.
Yeah.
You should silence your phone because I'm guessing it's going to start ringing.
Good.
Just kidding. Well, that's good to know, though. You know, it's a great time of year to fill the freezer. So if folks are interested, your contact information is out there. I think people can find you if they want to find you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to hold my cell number tightly to myself, but since it's really my only phone now, it's 355-5618.
There you go. All right. Very good. Well, we'll see what happens.
Leave a message. If you don't leave a message, I'm not going to call you back.
Right. So so we've just got a few minutes left in the show, Todd. It's always a surprise at how fast it goes. But so tell us a little bit about the future of the farm and the next steps and what you see happening in the next 5 to 10 years with the herd, et cetera.
That's always a great question because I'm usually only in the present. Farming always throws loops in what you want to do and yeah. what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
I see things more or less progressing status quo. I'll build the herd probably back up. 85 animals was, I didn't realize the work until I cut the herd back and then realized what I was doing. And holy cow, you know, it was a lot nicer getting down to about 40 animals. But I think I won't come up again that high. I think I'll keep them roughly around 60. Right now I'm really trying to concentrate on field management, and we got a lot of old ground still in production up there on the farm, and things need to be turned, things need to be rejuvenated, if you will. So along with that capacity, you know, I need to keep my numbers down low, because they'll be coming off of ground that I've kind of dual purposed, if you will, both bison and hay production.
Yeah.
On that same ground. I foresee the same, more or less, focus.
You're not going to introduce sheep or woolly pigs or anything like that on the farm?
No sheep. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I've never been a sheep or goat person. I don't know.
See what happens.
I have some elk, but maybe not for much longer. But that's been going on for about 10 years, as Amy can also say. Every year, I'm going to get out of the elk. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm always up for an adventure.
Yeah.
That's why I got into these guys in the first place.
Right. So I guess I want to point out too that if regarding the meat availability, this is not something that someone can just go into Three Bears and look for Pitchfork Ranch bison. It's not like on grocery store shelves. You do custom exempt slaughter, correct?
Correct. Yeah. And it's all private treaty. So it's farm gate sales, if you will.
Right. So a person buys a piece of the animal per se, a half of an animal or a quarter of an animal from you.
Yeah. More. Half to whole.
Yeah.
I rarely will go down to a quarter.
Yeah.
I just feel like if you can afford a half, then you should, if you can afford a half or a quarter, you can afford a half and split it with your family,
there you go.
Or family members or neighbor, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get a piece of the whole animal that way.
Yeah. And did you want to mention, Denali Meat Company and your... What's going on with them? Because I think minutes, we've got just a couple of minutes left. So, yeah.
Well, real quick, for those of you that don't know, I'm a partner in Denali Meat Company, and we have purchased a mobile slaughter plant. Got through all of our paperwork, CASA plans, yada, yada, yada. And we're waiting on the powers to be to give us our USDA stamp. But until that stamp comes in, we have started doing custom exempt slaughter.
Okay.
And so if people are interested in getting their live animal butchered and don't need a USDA stamp,
there's another option in
town
now.
There's another option.
Okay.
And you can call one of our managing partners. That's Brian Johnson at 841-5602.
Okay.
And
that's exciting news.
Yeah, it's a long time waiting, and we're ready to get her going.
Yeah, very good. So Denali Meat Company is up and running. Todd, thank you so much for joining me in the studio this morning for this edition of Ag Matters Radio. It's been a pleasure to learn more about Pitchfork Ranch, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.